We have the pleasure to welcome today François Delarue. François is professor at Université Nice Côte d'Azur. He has been working as a leading expert on the theory of midfield games for almost 10 years, with two books published on the subject. For these books, the AMS awarded him and René Carmona with the Joseph Doux Prize in 2020. He was co-editor-in-chief with Peter Fritz of the journal Annals of Applied Probability between 2019 and 2021. And today, he will speak about a weak solution to the master equation of potential midfield games.
Thank you. Thank you, Céline. So indeed, I'm going to speak about one of my favorite subjects for several years. So this is midfield games. And I will start with a review of the subject, and then I will try to give you some insight into or towards new results that I got with one of my collaborators, Alekos Chekin, who is in Italy, and he spent some time in Nice here a few years ago. So this is really a talk at the intersection between probability. You will see that there are probability, or there is probability, SDEs, but also probability theory in general, and analysis. And clearly, for people like you who like PDEs and probability, this is really a talk at the intersection between both fields. So let me start with a short overview of the theory of mean field games and what I'm going to call the master equation, which is one equation that appears in this theory and that is a bit intriguing or a bit fascinating. So I will start with some motivation about midfield games. In fact, this is a theory for games with many, many players. And the idea is that it comes from macroeconomics, and you have each player inside the population. So each of them has a cost functional. Okay, so each of the player has a cost functional. And there are some interactions between those players, and clearly it might be very complex. And what you assume is that there is a kind of structure so that players see one each other through some aggregated quantity. So assume, for instance, that you have some financial players. They may see one each other through the price of some good, for instance. And so in that case, the price is some aggregated quantity. And so what you have is that each of these players has the choice for a given strategy, and the impact of her strategy on the aggregate might be very, very small. But since there are many, many players, you wonder about the shape of the equilibria, the shape of the compromises, exactly as you do usually in game theory. So really, you have to think of those players as playing together and trying to find a compromise, but there are many, many of them. So this is what you want to do, to find a compromise. And in fact, the key point is that if you assume that there are many, many players and there is a kind of symmetry in the structure of the game, you may expect some averaging principle that could lead to a game with an infinite number of players, and possibly this game could be simpler to address. And in fact, if you think of the theory of midfield models that is very well known in probability theory, this is not surprising. So surprising because you know that when you have many, many IID samples, for instance, then when you make the average, somehow you simplify the structure of the model. And this is something that was pointed out in the book of von Neumann himself and Morgan Stern on game theory. He was pointing out the fact that possibly for games with many, many players, there could be a kind of gain on the complexity of the game because of the averaging statistical phenomenon. So you have this sentence that is in italic. So it says that in many branches of physical sciences, you have many numbers of players, and this might be easier to handle. And this is exactly what happens in midfield games when you pass to the limits with some nice structure on the games, you may expect a decrease of complexity. So this is exactly the rationale for addressing midfield games. These are games on a continuum of players, and you want to benefit from the midfield structure of the problem to directly address the limits and to expect to gain on the complexity of the problem. So what I'm going to do is to give you one typical example for this kind of games, and then I will give the mathematical formulation. So you have four typical pictures on this slide. This one, for instance, is one of the examples that Pierre Williams, I will give you a few names about bibliography next, but for sure, certainly, you know that Pierre Williams did a lot on the theory. And so he gave some lectures more than 10 years ago at the Collège de France. And this was one of his favorite examples. You have drivers, and they want to go around a large roundabout. So this one is Place de l'Étoile in Paris. And so you have all these people, and each of them wants to minimize something, precisely the time that is needed to go outside or to exit the roundabout. So the cost functional that everybody has here is exactly the mean time the time I should say you need to exit the roundabout. But clearly, one driver in this flow of population or in this population see the others. So if you take one car here, it's going to see the cars that are around. And you don't really care who is where. You care about the local shape of the population that the cars in the middle sees around. So what you care about is the local distribution of the other vehicles or the other particles around you. So in fact, what you say is that one player sees the others just in terms of the statistical distribution of the population. And so this is exactly what happens in midfield games. When you decide of your strategy, you see the impact on your cost, but your cost depends also on some on the local state of the population. And for sure, this is dynamic as well. And in the end, you want to find a compromise for one typical player in the population who is trying to minimize the cost that is needed to go outside the roundabouts. This example on the left is exactly similar. So you assume that you have many people in the hall of an airport, for instance, and at some point you assume that there is a fire, for instance, that starts, and everybody is trying to reach out the exit as fast as possible. But clearly, you may have some congestion phenomena. And once again, your strategy will depend on the way you see the others, and the way you see the others is determined by the state of the population. So typically by the density of the people around you. This final example, I'm not going to discuss the right one on the bottom pane. So the example that you have here is for prosumers in electricity markets. So you see that you have people living in a building, and on the top of the building you have some solar panels. So everybody is producing some electricity by using the solar panels. So in this way, there is a local production of electricity, but at the same time, people consume electricity, possibly from the solar panels or possibly from a big producer of electricity. So now what happens is that the price of electricity is given as a result of a trade-off between the local production of electricity, the local consumption of electricity, and the global production of electricity as given by the global producer. And once again, there is a compromise between all these people. So these are typical examples that you can find for midfield games in the literature. I'm not going to enter much more in the details of this. Now I'm going to switch to the mathematical formulation. But if you really wonder about typical applications of the theory, you can think of these pictures. So now what I would like to do is precisely to define what we could call a compromise to a minfield game. So what is a minfield game and what is a solution or a compromise to a minfield game? And this is the main slide somehow. This is the starting point. I'm not going to detail the connection with a game with a finite number of players. This is another part of the theory, which is typically, if you know a minfield system, this would be addressing convergence of finite particle system to minfield particle systems and propagation of chaos properties. We know how to do that, but this is a longer story and I don't have time enough to do that today. So I'm directly addressing the limit problem when you have an infinite number of players in the population. And so the starting point is to say, what could be a compromise for all these players playing a game? And the compromise, as usual for game theory, will be given as a fixed point. So we are looking for a fixed point to some mapping. And the key point is that this fixed point is defined on probability measures. And precisely, these are flows of probability measures. So you see that here you have at any time t, you have mu t, and mu t is the statistical state of the population at a given time t. So if you think of the previous pictures, this could be the state of the population in the whole of the airport at a given time after the starting of the fire in the airport. And so you are looking for this mu t. So you don't know yet what it is when you start the definition of a minfield game. This is the unknown. This will be the fixed point at the end of the day. So you are given a candidate for being an equilibrium, and you say, well, I'm going to take somebody in the population. So now you say, I'm addressing one particle, one player inside the population. And so I'm looking at the evolution of these tagged or reference particle in the population. So what you say is that you take one person in the population, and these are the dynamics of this person. And this is given, for instance, by a stochastic differential equation. This is the typical model that you can think in connection with the title of this seminar. And for sure, what you have is that in this dynamics, you have two things. You have the a traditional or usual Brownian motion. So this one, everybody knows what it means. And let me say that in blue here, I'm sorry. So this one is a control. So typically you can tune the velocity. So this is a typical instance of what could be a game for somebody moving in the whole of the airport. So you are choosing the direction. You are choosing your velocity, and then there are some local shocks in the position, and so this describes the evolution of one person in the population, of one player in the population. And with this person, you assign a cost. So you see that with capital X, you define a cost and you have the definition of this cost. I'm sorry, here. You have, is there quelque chose? Is there any question? I'm on a seminar now. So. Okay. I'm sorry about this. So with one person in the population, you assign a cost. And so you see that the cost depends on two things. On the first one, you have that in the cost, you see the state of the player itself. So this capital X.
Yes, exactly.
And at the same time, you also see in the cost the state of the population. So let me just erase those things so that you see clearly what we are doing now. So once again, you have the local states of the particle and the global state of the population. And you see that the structure of the cost depends, as usual in stochastic control theory, it depends on the terminal cost, on the running cost. And in the running cost, you have two things. Here, this is separated just for simplicity, but you could guess of more complicated running cost. Here, this is a kind of potential energy for the interaction between the states of the player capital X and the state of the population. And here, this is a kind of kinetic energy for the square of your velocity. So this is a typical cost. And you have to realize that those little g here and those little f, so these cost functional that you have at terminal time and inside the running cost. So it depends on the private state of the player and on the state of the population. So the typical example for this, you could guess of a convolution. So you take one kernel little hatch, and you see the distance between x and y with respect to this kernel little hatch when y is distributed with respect to the measure mu. So really, this is a potential energy that describes the energy of interaction between little x and the state of the population. And the very key point at this stage of the model is that you have to realize that g and f is the same for all the players in the population. So there is a kind of symmetry that I was pointing out before. And now what you say is that when the compromise is given, you want to minimize. So when you know or when you are given the states of the others in the population, you want to minimize your cost. So this is exactly the next stage in the theory. You say, well, once I am given this capital J, I am minimizing, and the optimal path, you could assume that you have nice assumptions on the coefficients so that there is a unique minimizer when mu is given. So at this stage, mu is given. You say, well, I am given the unique minimizer. And now you want to define a notion of compromise. And the notion of compromise that you define is completely reminiscent. And I know that many of you in the audience know this precisely, that is reminiscent of Nash equilibria in game theory. In game theory, what you say is that when you are at the equilibria and one player tries to deviate from the equilibrium, there is no interest for him. There is no incentive. She or he must stay at the equilibria, otherwise she's going to decrease or he's going to decrease her reward or to increase her cost. So here, what I'm going to say is exactly the same. If I am deviating from the compromise, then the cost is going to increase. So what it means is that I'm going to enforce a fixed point by saying that the law of the minimizer is exactly equal to the law of the population itself. So I am given the population, and what is the minimizer for the tagged particle inside the population? This is the law of the population itself. So this is precisely the definition of a mean field game, or the mathematical definition. You require that the law of the optimizer is the state of the population itself. And now you have to solve this fixed point. And it goes back to what some people did more than 15 years ago. So you have this, it seems that you don't really see well. So the first names are Lasserie and Nyon. So these two French people that did a lot in the field. And you also have some people in Canada that did also a lot. Peter Keynes, Minnie Wong, and Roland Mallamé. And this was really the starting point of this mean field game theory. Now, what are the questions from a mathematical point of view once you have the model? For sure, you would like to say whether there are some equilibria. Do you have some solutions? Whether they are unique? What are the characterization? Is it possible to make the connection with games with a finite number of players? So these are plenty of questions that you can find in literature on mean field games. And I'm going to give you a very basic characterization of the equilibria. There are basically two paths. Either you characterize the optimal cost by using probability theory, or you characterize the optimal cost by using PDE theory. Even though this is a seminar on SDEs, I have decided to show you the PDE point of view because this is the most popular one in the field. So if you want to have a look at other papers, maybe this is simpler. And I'm sure that everybody knows the connection between what I'm going to say in the probabilistic way and what I'm going to say from the PDE point of view. So from a PDE point of view, what you say is that you have a look at this stage number two, or this step number two. So you have a look at this. And you say, when mu is given, I'm going to characterize the optimal states, or the optimal solution to this stochastic optimal control problem in terms of a PD. And this is something that everybody knows here. What you do is that you have a look at the value function associated with the cost, the stochastic control problem. So you have your terminal reward, your running cost, you have the energy on the alpha, and what you want to do is to minimize, and you do this minimization when you are given little x. And what is little x? This is the starting point of the private state of your tagged player at time little t. And you solve, or you write down the HJB equation for this little u when mu is given. So you have that mu is given in this slide. And you know, I'm sure that everybody knows here knows this. You write down the equation and you get a Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And so here you get this Laplace because of the Brenner motion in the dynamics. And here this is the optimization part, which gives you the Hamiltonian, and you have to minimize the Hamiltonian. So I guess that you recognize the action of the first order derivative of u onto a possible velocity, and then you minimize when you put the kinetic energy inside. This is very simple because of the shape of the cost of the energy that I took here. The shape of this equation is even simpler. So this is just for the purpose of the talk. I decided to have this simple form of cost, but in fact there are some generalization to more general convex cost in the direction alpha. Anyway, you have this backward Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman equation, but the key point that you have to realize is that in this equation, you see the state of the population. So you see mu t. So you cannot solve this equation once you don't know, or as long as you don't know what is mu t to solve, to know what is the value of this cost, you should know what is mu t, but mu t is precisely what you are looking for. So what you do next is that you say, I have to be careful that little u depends on mu t, but I have to formulate in a PDE fashion what is the meaning of the fixed point condition in a mean field game. I know that the law of the optimal path is exactly equal to mu t. This is the definition that I took for my mean field game. And I remind you, and this is something that everybody knows, once you have solved the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, you know that the optimal strategy, the feedback function, is given in terms of the derivative of the value function. And in this model, this is absolutely easy. This is minus the gradients. So this is minus the derivative of the value function. So here, this is purely stochastic control theory. And then, once you have this stochastic differential equation, once again, everybody knows in the audience what is the evolution of the marginal laws of this stochastic differential equation. This is the solution of this Kolmogorov or Fokker-Planck equation. And so you end up with two equations, one that is a forward equation. This is the equation for mu t, and one that is backward. This is the equation for the value. So you see that I know that many people in the audience know forward-backward equation. This is a forward-backward system. The forward equation is the equation for the state of the population, and the backward equation is the equation for the value that you are paying for a given choice of the population. And so you have to solve this forward-backward system, but there are many people here who know that this is very difficult to solve a forward-backward system because the two time directions are conflicting. And this is the very spice of this theory, is that you have to solve this forward-backward system in infinite dimension because the unknowns are measures or functions. And what can you say about the existence of solutions? I'm not going to address this question. There are plenty of papers on the solvability of what I'm going to call the MFG system. So this is really a forward-backward system, except that there is no noise. There could be a noise from models with what we call a common noise, but I'm not going to address this question today. And in fact, if you want to have a very nice survey or a very nice review of the subject, you can have a look at lecture notes written by Cardaliaga and Porretta recently. And this was published in this series by Springer, the lecture notes in mathematics. And this was a course given in Italy, CIME 2019. You could recast this forward-backward system in terms of a forward-backward system of stochastic differential equations of the Mackin-Vlasov type. This is something that you can do. You can choose a probabilistic approach. You reformulate the Fokker-Planck equation as a stochastic differential equation. You reformulate the evolution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation in terms of a backward stochastic differential equation. And in this way, you see that you can characterize in a completely equivalent way equilibria by using forward-backward SDEs of Mackin-Vlasov type. So this is another connection with the title of this seminar. But this is not my purpose. What I would like to say here is that I would like to regard the MFG system as the characteristics of a PD. So this is something that, once again, many of you know. When you have a forward-backward system, you want to express the solution to the backward equation as a function of the state of the forward equation. So what is the state of the forward equation here? This is the state of the population. So basically, this is before this was mu t, now this is mt. Sorry for this change. So mt is the state of the population at time t, and you want to explain the best cost at time t and for the private state little x as a function of the state of the population. This is exactly what you expect for connecting a forward equation with a backward equation in a forward-backward system. And you wonder about what you have in the middle. This is this little v. In, for those of you who know forward-backward equations and you know who know these very nice papers by John Feng, this is what he calls somehow the decoupling field. Except that in the works of Jen Feng, there is some stochasticity in addition of it. But this is very, very much the same, except that the framework is infinite dimensional and there is no noise. And so, well, what would be the interpretation of this quantity? This would be the equilibrium value for your tagged player when the population starts from little t from the state little m, and the private player starts from little x. So this would be a value for your game. This would be a kind of value function for the game. And this is a very, very nice object. And for sure, the question is, what would be the characterization of this little v? And this is something that you can postulate, you can guess. To guess what v should satisfy as a PD, you should say that if you believe that you have this identification, you should be able to expand the right-hand side in time. And if you expand in time, you should be able to recover exactly the same equation as the HJB equation for little u. So you expand in time and you say, well, this should be the same as ut itself when mt follows the Fokker-Planck equation. Equivalently, you say that if you follow the optimal path and you replace m by the law of the optimal path, you replace little x by the state of the optimal path, if you expand v of x star and the law of x star, you should recover the dynamics of the value along the equilibrium. And so this is a way to identify the shape of the PD that little v should satisfy, because you should say, I have a chain rule for this object that makes me, that allows me to identify the PD that little v should satisfy. So this is a kind of verification argument, if you want. So at the end of the day, you can have an equation for little v. This is what people call the master equation for mean field games. This is a very nice equation, but the very spice of it is that since the state variable is a measure argument, this is an equation that is stated on the space of probability measure. This is the main difficulty of it. So this is a PD on the space of probability measure. And this is the shape of the PD. So let me just have a brief look at the shape of the PDE. The blue line is precisely the what you have in the minimization term, meaning that this is, you recognize here the HJB equation. But at the same time, you have to pay for the mean field interaction in your dynamics. And the mean field interaction says two things. If you take the derivative of V with respect to the state of the measure, it is acting on the optimal feedback. This is the first remark. And plus, I think that there is no minus one half. This is a mistake. This is my mistake here. And if you take the Brunner motion or the Laplace in the HJB equation and the Fokker-Planck equation, there is an action onto the derivative of V. And so you have this a little bit strange derivative dy d mu. So I have to explain what is the meaning of d mu at this stage of the talk. So what is d mu of V? So V is a function of a measure. So I have to say what is the derivative of this. And to define the derivative of this, there is a very simple way, which is to say, so I am freezing T, X. X is given in the definition of the derivative because this is a derivative in the measure arguments. And I need an extra variable y. What is this y? It means that I take a derivative along a delta mass. So this is a delta mass located at point y. And you see that here I make a convex perturbation of the original measure little m and of the delta mass at point y. And I say I want the difference, the finite difference, to have a limit when divided by epsilon and when epsilon tends to zero. And I call this the flat derivative of V with respect to the measure. So I take the measure, I make a convex perturbation by means of a delta mass, and then I say there should be a limit when I divide by epsilon, and this is the flat derivative. And the d mu is not exactly the flat derivative. The d mu is the derivative in y of the flat derivative. This is a bit subtle, but this is what people call the Wasserstein derivative, and this is the derivative that appears in Optimal Transportation and the books of Gigli, Ambrosio, and Savary, and so on. And so this d mu, let me just erase this so that you see clearly, this d mu that you see here, this is exactly this one, okay? So this is the same. So this is the dy of the flat derivative. And for the one that is here, you take another derivative in y because somehow this is the action of the Laplace onto v. So or onto d mu of v. So there are two derivatives in y. So you take the flat derivative and you have two derivatives in y because of the action of the Laplace. So this is the shape of the master equation. And so for sure, people try to say, what about the solvability of this equation? But this is a difficult equation because this is a nonlinear equation. And for nonlinear equation, you may expect some singularity phenomena. Many of you know backward SDEs. So you know that you may have some semilinear PDEs or quasi-linear PDEs, and you know that you may have some singularities. Here, if you have a look at the singularities that you may have, in the direction x, there is no problem because basically you have the Laplace, or equivalently in the SDE, you have the Brunner motion. But the very, very big problem is that you may have some singularities in the direction m. This is the very, very big difficulty that you have. So people try to say, well, what could be sufficient conditions to be sure that there is no singularity? And once again, this is something that, or these are things that some of you, and especially Shige, knows very well about the solvability of forward-backward system. If you put some monotonicity constraints, then you may get rid of singularities and you may enforce existence plus uniqueness and have some smoothness to the resulting PDE that you have and that is associated with the forward-backward system. So here, what is the shape of the monotonicity? This is exactly this one. This is what people call the Lascelles monotonicity condition. So you take, what you do is that you take your cost little f and you take this for two measures, mu and mu prime, and you integrate with respect to the difference mu minus mu prime, and you require that the difference or the integral, I'm sorry, is non-negative. We have some examples of this kind of cost, and this is the same for G. And if you have smooth coefficients plus monotonicity, we know that there is a classical solution to the master equation. So you have a series of works in this direction. So I did some work with Lasriel Nyons and Pierre Cardaliaghe. This was based on PDE formulation. And I did also some works with Chassagneux and Crisan based on probabilistic formulation. But there are plenty of other works. And for instance, if you like SDEs and mean field SDEs, you have also very, very nice results, not exactly for the nonlinear, but for the linear case, in a very nice paper by Bogdan, Li, Peng, and Reiner. This is a very nice paper, which is very much related to the techniques that we use with Chassagneux and Crisan. But now what people are trying to do now is to go beyond what could be the solvability of the master equation in a weaker setting. So this is, if you go to a conference on mean field games, this is one of the questions that you can find. So now people are trying to propose new notion of solution so that there is still a unique solution, or in a given class, a unique solution to the master equation when you relax the conditions or when you relax the setting. And for instance, you may find this in works by Charles Bertucci, Shenzhen Mu and Zhanfeng Zhang, Wilfried Gongbo and Alpar Metzaros. These are a series of nice and recent results, 2020, 2021, exactly in this direction. Some of them are PD results, some of them are probabilistic results, and they try to relax the notion of solution. Basically, in all these papers, you require a kind of monotonicity. So not exactly this one. There are some variants proposed, for instance, by Wilfried, Zhanfeng. But basically, you need some monotonicity. And then maybe you can relax by using weaker regularity on the coefficients. But you still need monotonicity. What I would like to discuss, I just have 20 minutes, but I wanted to have this very long introduction to explain to you the motivation, as otherwise the interest for my talk would have been very, very small, is to say, is it possible to have a notion and for which we have uniqueness of solution to the master equation if we don't have monotonicity? And this is the purpose of the work that I talked about in the first slide with Alekos Chekin in what I'm going to call four potential games. I'm going to explain what it means. Basically, this is a case when the master equation derives from a Hamilton-Jacobi equation on the space of probability measures. And because of this connection, well, this is much, much easier to try to identify what the solution should be. So this is the very spice or the basic philosophy of what we are doing. So another step forward in the presentation of the theory, I'm sorry that this is a bit long introduction, which is the connection with mean field control. I'm sure that you know that there are mean field games, but there is also a mean field control. And what is the connection between the two fields? In fact, mean field control, in my mind, this is the same as optimal control of Mackin-Vlasov equations. This is the same. And to try to explain what I have in mind, I'm coming back to the same mean field game as before. So if you remember, I have the forward equation for the tag player. So this is not the equation for the population. This is for one player in the population. And this is the cost that she has to minimize. And mu t here, this is the state of the environment. She wants to minimize the cost when the environment is given. But I make a very, very strong assumption. I assume that the cost, little f, derives from a functional capital F on the space of probability measures. So you see that I require, this is a structural condition that I require on the game, that little f is the derivative, the flat derivative, when you make a perturbation along Dirac delta masses. This is the derivative of a potential that is above. And this is the reason why I'm going to say that this is a potential mean field game. And the very, very nice point is that if you have a mean field game with coefficients that derive from a potential, then there is a mean field control problem that is on the top of your mean field game. And I'm going to explain this to you in the next slide. But this is the key word in this slide. So Now, this is another problem on the space of probability measures, but you see that you will see that there is a subtlety that this is not exactly the same. So instead of taking the same cost, or instead of taking the cost functional as in the previous slide, I take another cost functional, but now it depends on little on capital F and capital G. Capital G is the potential for little g. This is exactly the same as for little f. So I take the evolution of my attack player and I compute the cost in this way. But now, instead of saying that I am minimizing first and then I take the fixed points, I do the converse. I require that mu t is the law of xt. So now this is a Mackinglass of control problem because in the cost coefficients, capital F and capital G, they do depend on the state mu t, and mu t is the law of xt. So they do depend on the statistical law of xt, which is not what I did before. In mean field games, I am first minimizing and then I identify with the law of the player. Now I identify with the law of the player and then I minimize. And this is the reason why people call this a Mackinglass of control problem. And you can recast this problem in terms of PDEs because basically you assume that the control here is in a feedback form. You have some results that allow you to do that. And so if you write directly the evolution of the marginal law of your player, you see that what you want to do is to minimize a cost functional depending on the solution to your Fokker-Planck equation. And you want to choose optimally. I'm sorry, there is a d mu t x that is missing here. This is a mistake. What you do here is that you minimize your energy. Okay. Now, what is the connection with mean field games? So now this is not a mean field game. This is a minimization problem or an optimal control problem on the space of probability measures. If you write down the Pontryagin principle, so the first order condition for this problem, well, this is your mean field game. That's the point. So if you write down maybe this is in the next slide. Sorry, let me move forward. No, I'm sorry. I forgot to put this on my slide. So if you write down the first order condition, this is your MFG. This is your mean field game. So this is the connection that you have. So you know that if you find a solution to the mean field control problem, the forward equation will be a solution to the mean field game I gave you with the coefficients given by the flat derivative of capital F and capital G. And now you have a control problem that is a control problem that many of you know. And when you have a control problem, you have a look at the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So now this is another equation on the state on the space of probability measure. This is the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So this is this equation. And in fact, inside this equation, you recognize some energy. This is the derivative in the direction of the measure of your value function. And the value function now, this is V, depending on the state of the population. And you compute, so the Hamiltonian of this, depending on the derivative of the of capital V. And you have, or you see, the action of your Laplace in the Fokker-Planck equation or the Brenner motion in the dynamics of capital X. And here, this is capital F. This is the running cost. So this is your Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And now people also are doing a lot about the solvability of this equation. And for instance, you have plenty of works at this time on viscosity solutions for this equation. And one difficulty is precisely because of the second order term that you have, this term here. It makes difficult the way to derive some nice result for viscosity solutions. And you have some results by Koso, Pham, Karubi, and Godzi, a recent preprint that appeared on archive a few months ago. And there is another direction by Giovanni Conforti, Daniela Tonon, using the fact that the Laplace is associated with a gradient flow on the space of probability measures. So these are possible paths to define viscosity solutions for which you have a possible comparison principle. Okay, back to my problem. What I would like to say is to say, no, I'm not having a look at viscosity solutions. I want to have a look at generalized or almost everywhere solutions to this equation. So I would like to say I have a class of functions V that are not completely smooth, but somehow they are smooth almost everywhere. What it means almost everywhere, this is not clear because we are in infinite dimension, but that satisfies this equation. And once I have solved the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, I would like to say that it gives me a candidate for solving the master equation. And in fact, what should be the candidate for solving the master equation? If you remember what we said is that was that little f was df over delta m. And what we expect is that once you have solved the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, possibly delta V over delta M is a solution of the master equation, and in fact is the unique solution in a given class to the master equation. So this is a way to possibly address the solvability of the master equation without using monotonicity, just by using the fact that in this setting, there is a connection with some Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Okay, now the question is, what does it mean to have almost everywhere solution to this equation? Somehow this is what we try to explain in the paper with Alekos check-in. And I know that I'm a bit out of time. So I'm just trying to now to explain to you the very idea of this. I guess that even though the subject is a bit technical now, I guess that you can see that there might be interesting things maybe outside the result itself. I want to take derivative with respect to functionals depending on my measures. And I want to say that somehow I have almost everywhere derivatives. So the difficulty is that this is studied on the space of probability measures. And to simplify, I'm going to say, no, I'm going to replace by the probability measures on the torus. This is the first simplification. And I do this, and if I do that, I have a very, very simple way to write down what is the probability measure. I'm having a look at the collection of Fourier coefficients. So if you have a probability measure, you can write down the Fourier coefficients. So this is nothing but the characteristic function somehow. Not exactly the characteristic. Let me say the Fourier coefficients. The Fourier coefficients. And I say, when I have the Fourier coefficients, I'm going to discretize the Hamilton-Jacobi equation to recover some finite dimensional setting. I want to discretize because I want something that is stated almost everywhere. I could try to find a probability measure for which I have something almost everywhere, a probability measure on the full space. This could be one way, but I'm saying no. I want to come back to finite dimension. And a way to discretize, to come back to finite dimension, is to have a look at probability measures for which the higher modes is equal to zero. So you see that here I have a look at probability measures for which the higher modes are equal to zero. So you see that if k is greater than m, I require that the Fourier mode is equal to zero. And you could say, why to discretize with respect to Fourier coefficients? Why to truncate with respect to Fourier coefficients? And this is certainly the key idea is in this part of the talk, is that the difficulty in the analysis of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation is precisely related with this term. This is the one that is difficult for the theory of viscosity solution. You have the derivatives of y, of the derivative of mu, of the value function. But this term is associated with the Laplace. And if you think of Fourier coefficients, you think of Fourier basis. And the Fourier basis is diagonal for the Laplace. So this is a basis of eigenfunctions for the Laplace term. And it means that if you take this operator, which is exactly the operator that you have in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, this is an operator for which the characteristics, in fact, is the heat equation. So the heat equation is the characteristics of this operator that you have at the bottom slide. So this is very, very nice because it says that this truncation operation is stable by by the heat equation. So if you take an initial probability measure for which the higher modes are equal to zero, if you transform by the heat equation, this property will remain correct. And this is the main interest for truncated in terms of the Fourier coefficients when you have this kind of operator in your Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So once you do that, you say, well, I just have to rephrase what is my derivative, my flat derivative, in terms of the derivative with respect to the Fourier coefficients. So this slide is to say that, in fact, when you compute your flat derivative and you take the Fourier transform of it, or the Fourier coefficients, because this is on the torus, everything is periodic, this is the same as taking the derivative with respect to the Fourier coefficients. So you see that you have a basis, these are your Fourier coefficients, and in fact, when you take the derivative with respect to the Fourier coefficients, this is exactly the derivative that you have in your equation. This is the same derivative. So things are really, really consistent, and you have a dictionary to pass or to reformulate the original Hamilton-Jacobi equation in terms of derivatives with respect to the Fourier coefficients. And so now you say, I'm going to take my equation, and I'm going to rewrite the equation in terms of the Fourier coefficients themselves. So the Fourier coefficients of a measure, and you have to remember or to recall that a measure is a point. This is a typical point at which the PD is set in infinite dimension. So let me do this. For instance, if I take this term, which is somehow the bad term or one of the bad term in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, I can write it as delta y of the flat derivative. And now I do, or I say, I have a Fourier expansion for this. And I can rewrite this derivative in Fourier coefficients. I write this in Fourier coefficients, and I have an expression of the same term in terms of my Fourier coefficients. And the Fourier coefficients, now these are the points at which my PDE is formulated. This is exactly the same for the nonlinear term, but this is a bit more complicated for the linear term. I should say this is the Hamiltonian that I have on the space of probability measure in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And I'm going to reformulate this in terms of the derivatives with respect to the Fourier coefficients. And in this way, I'm cheating a little bit because here you see that this is, when I expand, maybe I will have plenty of Fourier coefficients. So here, what I do is that I say that I can have, I don't want to enter too much in this business, but clearly when I do this kind of writing, I can say that I can truncate the expansion. So here I should have in dim UV, I should have all the Fourier coefficients. But what I'm going to say is that there is an approximation here in terms of a series, once again by capital N, of derivatives with respect to the first Fourier coefficients. And the decay is known because we have some results of smoothness in the direction y. The difficulty is not y, this is m. So this is absolutely fine to truncate the expansion. So at the end of the day, you reformulate the Hamilton-Jacobi equation in terms of the Fourier coefficients themselves. So you see that I started from the HJ equation on the space of probability measures, and now I reformulate this in an equation in terms of the Fourier coefficients themselves. So you have to remember that these are points at which I formulate the PD. And since I truncate the Fourier expansion at a level capital N, this is not exactly an equation, or this is not exactly equal to zero. I can say that this is a zero up to a remainder that is going to tend to zero when the level of truncation tend to infinity. So I started from a Hamilton-Jacobi equation on the space of probability measures. I say, I write again this equation in terms of the Fourier coefficients. And now this is an equation that is formulated for a finite number of Fourier coefficients because of my truncation. So it makes sense in finite dimension to say that this is almost everywhere satisfied when I just have a look at a finite number of Fourier coefficients. So this is the way we have a notion of almost everywhere. So the first result is that the value function indeed satisfy this generalized formulation under nice assumption, but not that much, meaning that almost everywhere in finite dimension, I have this approximation. And the next result is it possible to prove that this is unique? And in fact, this is the main difficulty, which is to prove that this formulation for the Hamilton-Jacobi has a unique solution. So this is one result that we have. I don't have time enough to explain to you, but let me say that this is one result that we have. If you restrict yourself to value functions that are semi-concave, so for those of you who know viscosity solutions, maybe in finite dimension, they know that there is a strong connection between viscosity solution to HJB equation and semi-concave generalized solution. So in fact, we can prove uniqueness when we restrict the equation to a class of semi-concave solutions. So semi-concave here, it means that you take V, so this is a candidate for solving the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. You say I'm computing at a random variable X. I transform X into a probability measure by saying I have a look at the law of X. And then I take a perturbation by another random variable, y, and you require that this is upper bounded by the square of the L2 norm of y. This is basically the notion of semi-concavity. And so we can prove that we have a unique solution in this almost everywhere generalized sense when we restrict the solution to a semi-concave solution. I have 2 minutes just to say that once you have this, you are able to come back to mean field games and to say that for the master equation that you started from, indeed, this is possible to say that you can formulate a notion of solution for which you have existence, which is given by the derivative of the value function, and uniqueness. And in fact, basically, the unique solution will be the derivative of the value function that you constructed in the previous slide. But this is absolutely important to formulate this notion of solution to say that the Hamilton-Jacobi equation is formulated or holds true almost everywhere. So this is the end of my talk. I'm on time. So I started from mean field games. I explained to you that one way or one subject in the field now is the master equation. We have some existence of classical solutions for monotonicity plus smooth coefficients. What people are trying to do is to relax those conditions. You may relax smoothness of the coefficients. And another possibility is to try to relax monotonicity. And here, this is an example for this. You use the fact that there is a connection with potential games. So or for potential games, there is a connection with mean field control. You formulate the HJB equation on the space of probability measure, and you try to get an almost everywhere solution and to prove that the derivative of it is indeed the solution to the master equation that you wanted to have. Okay, thank you for your invitation and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, François, for your nice talk. Are there some questions?
Hello, may I ask?
Yes, please. Sure.
Thanks for the nice talk. And in your talk, you use very concrete example for the forward system, which is a linear equation. Hello?
Yes, I can hear you, yes.
Ah, okay. And in the end, it seems that you change